Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Social media can be a dark, unfriendly, toxic place. But every now and then, you find elements of social media that are bright spots, that are people you actually enjoy talking to, including people who hold worldviews that are very different from your own. So on today's show, I'm interviewing one of the atheists behind my favorite atheist Twitter account. This is the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today we're talking with Ben Watkins of the Real Atheology podcast. So they have a Twitter account with a little over 10,000 followers. And what's interesting is if you go to my Twitter account, I only follow two people. I follow Catholic Answers and the Pope. And that's it. What do you expect, right? But there are other accounts that I enjoy looking at. So I don't follow them, but my search bar on Twitter does have them kind of as favorites that I go and I click down to see what's happening. And so one of these that pops up is Real Atheology. I really enjoy their takes on atheism and arguments for and against the existence of God, because I find it thoughtful. Now, here's another thing just to put out there why I enjoy this Twitter account so much and why I think we're going to have a great conversation today. A lot of times I'll go on social media and I will see people discussing issues who disagree with me. And I have a temptation. I want to weigh in and say, yeah, but what about this? Or have you thought about this? But then I immediately tell myself, it's not worth the trouble. There's an old expression, don't kick the tar baby. I think it comes from a Brer Rabbit tale, where if you're a fan of Disney and Splash Mountain, you know there's Brer Fox and Brer Bear and Brer Rabbit. And the fox and the bear are always trying to get Brer Rabbit. And so they trick him one day by making a little rabbit baby out of tar. When Brer Rabbit goes along and kicks this baby fashioned out of tar, his feet get stuck in it, and he gets covered in tar, and he gets stuck there. And that's where the expression, don't kick the tar baby, comes from. The idea here is sometimes you want to just avoid messes before you get into them. So I'll see discussions on social media, including with people I disagree with, and I want to correct them or add my thoughts. But I realize, you know what? Don't kick the tar baby. And that's some advice for you, that you see things on social media, sometimes it's better to not engage. But there are other people that I talk to on social media that I will add my two cents, and we actually have a really nice back and forth. And Real Atheology is one of those places where I am able to do that. Arguments for the existence of God, arguments against. One of their contributors is actually really interested in Eastern Catholicism. He looked at all the denominations of Christianity, and he thinks that Eastern Orthodoxy and Eastern Catholicism is probably the close. If there was a denomination of Christianity that was correct, he's reached the conclusion it's either Eastern Orthodoxy or Eastern Catholicism, like the Byzantine church that I attend. So without further ado, let me bring on one of the representatives to tell us more about Real Atheology, and then we'll have a discussion about how to raise the level of discourse between Catholics and Christians, and atheists and non-believers. So he is Ben Watkins. Ben, welcome to the Council of Trent podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Ben, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about Real Atheology and about yourself and how you got involved in it?
Yeah, so Real Atheology, a philosophy or religion podcast, started off as a YouTube channel by one of my friends, Justin Schieber. Mm-hmm. And so he and I met several years ago and really hit it off. And eventually he had me come on to the project. And so when it was time for him to step away from the project to pursue higher education, he asked me if I would take over the project for him. And so I obviously jumped at the opportunity because it was a way for me to get my writing out there, explore some ideas, have some fun. It's a great hobby, mm-hmm. To have. And, I really wanted to dedicate time and energy to exploring what our concept of religion could look like after we've rejected something like theism, like mm-hmm. perfect being theism or classical theism. What is still salvageable as far as our religious concepts, and what could religion in the future look like? And that was one of those questions that I didn't want to just tackle for a couple of months and then set it aside and keep returning to it. I really, really wanted to dig into that. Mm-hmm. And so it's really kind of encompassed the scope of a lot of my projects now.
And what I love about what you and the other individuals involved at Real Atheology do is that you engage religion, but you engage it in a way that's very different from the so-called new atheists. So I guess we have new atheism, Dawkins, Harris, Hitchens, and their kind of acolytes. And then the new atheism, as I want to call it, is now I feel like Dawkins and Hitchens are fading into history, and the face of atheism are kind of more popular YouTube commenters and channels, but I think a lot of them take theism as something to kind of be at war with and to ridicule and to engage just very surface level treatments of. Though I will say, in fairness to them, a lot of Christians engage atheism. They only take on surface level treatments of atheism and something to go at war at there as well. So I understand where they're coming from. But what you guys are doing, and you could comment more on this, is rather than a lot of quote-unquote new atheists kind of making an assault on religion, you guys really want to practice philosophy of religion, which is something that a lot of atheists actually kind of criticize or laugh at, even the concept of philosophy of religion.
Yes, I think you hit that nail right on the head. So I certainly will identify as an atheist, but first and foremost, I'm a philosopher. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoy philosophy, and I really believe in a dialectic or Socratic method of trying to get at the truth. I think these questions are super interesting, that they're worth trying to answer on their own. And there's something about the perennial questions of philosophy, those so-called questions that keep you up at night, that there's a wonder, there's a mystery that I know plenty of people on all sides can appreciate. So if I can use the philosophy of religion to help bring people into a deeper appreciation of philosophy itself, more power to them. You know, we have everything to gain and nothing to lose from an honest pursuit of truth.
Well, then let's look at that. So what are some things, and I believe you actually responded to this, or one of your members of the Real Atheology team responded to this on your Twitter handle like a week or two ago, about things that atheists do, like the worst arguments against God or the worst kind of arguments that atheists put out there. What are some things that your fellow atheists, you would advise them to do to kind of raise the level of discourse between believers and non-believers, between Christians and atheists? What are some things you see atheists do that you're like, oh, please don't do that?
So there's certainly several, but for the sake of brevity, I'll mention two, the two that I think are at least my favorite to pick on.
Sure.
So the first one that I fight that I always like to pick with my atheist peers is the idea of this lack of belief definition of atheism, which often enables some atheists to just play a pure skeptical role in a dialectic and to not really contribute in substantive ways to a conversation about the existence of God. And so that one really annoys me. I wish atheists would concede ground to theists such that we could move past, you know, the labels that we're taking on.
Right. Sometimes when I'm
actually engage the question.
Sure. And this one bugs me as well when I'm speaking with atheists, that I think there's, you know, two things that are hotly debated in atheism. Does, you know, with the atheism debate, does God exist, and what is an atheist? And I try not to get sidetracked too much in the what does atheism mean category, because I do want to talk about the existence of God. But when some atheists, I remember actually seeing not too long ago Aaron Raw, who would be the exact opposite of Real Atheology. I would say when it comes to temperament and approach and ways of valuing the issues, he is your photo negative, basically. But he's a very popular atheist YouTuber. He's mostly known, actually, and this is what's unfortunate, I think, a lot of times, because before I was religious, I was not always Christian. When I was a teenager, I was a deist. I believed in a God out there, but I wasn't religious. And then I eventually became Christian. But one of the things that held me back from being Christian was identifying Christianity with young earth creationism, as if the two were synonymous. And so Aaron Raw and others do a good job of debunking, you know, Christianity that's tied to young earth creationism, because I don't believe young earth creationism is true. But then he's good on some of those issues. But then when he tries to do philosophy, it's just off. So, for example, I retweeted not too long ago, Aaron Raw, just in a reply to someone, said, "Rocks are atheists." So, you know, saying that stones and rocks, if you define atheism as just a lack of belief, then there's a near infinite number of things that count as atheists. Whereas for me, and so if rocks and rocks and babies and pickup trucks are atheists, if that's your worldview, it's just not interesting to me. So I feel like when it comes to the burden of proof as an atheist, it's either you got to show there is no God, or you need to show that the reasons that are put forward for God, the best reasons, I would say, don't work, which is something that, and you guys are always touting, you know, the best academic atheists, people like Mackey, Sobel, Graham Oppie, have made efforts to do. So, I mean, do you think that some atheists, when they play this super skeptical game, they're just, they're absolving themselves of the academic responsibility of looking at the best arguments and then saying, here's what's wrong with them?
So, I would be hesitant to paint it in broad strokes,
sure,
just because I don't know, but I certainly have my suspicions. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it, at least in my experience, is really just an unwillingness to want to take on a burden of proof,
mm-hmm,
or burden of justification is probably, mm-hmm, the less intimidating way of saying it.
Right.
It's this idea that there's this naive intuition of, well, unless there's good reason to doubt something, or, you know, some epistemic principle such as this, mm-hmm, or some reason to believe in something, we can just say it doesn't exist. And that's the default.
Right.
And that they almost get offended if you then try to press them to give some sort of positive justification for a negative belief.
Right.
And so I think because people haven't thought about the question deep enough, they've just kind of stayed in that mode, that kind of defensive mode, where they would rather spend any dialectic just denying,
mm-hmm,
whatever the theist is saying. That's, you know, playing the part of the skeptic is easy. In that sense,
because
right, it then puts all the work on the theist. And so it no longer, you know, the question should be a back and forth.
Right.
But it's not the atheists, in my experience at least, have been hesitant, mm-hmm, to do that back and forth. They think that they shouldn't even have to, and that to suggest that they have to is to just completely misunderstand their view as an atheist,
right,
which is to just merely lack of.
Right. What was the other thing that bothers you with kind of modern atheism, new atheism, things like that?
So the argument that makes me roll my eyes is the, well, you're an atheist about several, you know, any number of gods that you may like to throw out there. I just go one God further than you, which I just think that's just a horrible argument.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, an anarchist being like, well, you just don't believe in any form of government. You know, I just go one form of government less than you. And that's somehow supposed to justify anarchy. No, that would be ridiculous. And I think it's the same kind of argument that if it doesn't even stand up to the slightest bit of,
right,
philosophical scrutiny.
Well, I think part of that, what that's rooted in, is this idea that Christians, like, arbitrarily pick one God. It's kind of like, you know, the old game, guess who, you know, and it's like, is your guy,
yeah,
wearing glasses? Does he have curly hair? Though now it's probably not politically correct to say, you know, guess who, you know, based on ethnicity, things like that. But imagine, like, you have the guess who board. And I feel like a lot of these atheists think like, oh, Christians have their God on the Guess Who board, and they just arbitrarily pick this God instead of all these other gods that are basically identical. So I feel like atheists would say, well, the God of St. Thomas Aquinas is basically identical to Zeus or Thor or these other gods of mythology. And so if you Christians are arbitrarily picking one God over the others, which then if you had Christians, especially those in the classical theist tradition, but even just Christians in general, people like William Lane Craig or others would say, no, what we believe in as God, capital G, is infinite, necessary, the ground of all being. These other deities you talk about, like Zeus or Thor, like for me, I would say that they couldn't be God. They're gods with a lowercase g, but they're just X-Men in the sky. They are beings with powers, but they don't have maximal powers, which is what you would say is related to God. So I agree with you. That is one that is always frustrated me as well. But I want to jump ahead to another question related to this, because I think this gets to the crux of why I enjoyed speaking with you guys about the existence of God versus other atheists. And it would be this: I find that the most pleasant atheists to talk to about atheism are those who will conclude that the existence of God is a philosophical question, not a scientific one. And because it's philosophical, it's going to be really difficult to resolve or impossible to resolve in a way that everybody agrees on the answer. And I think that's like a perennial feature of philosophy, that you have these good arguments, but on philosophical questions, you're not going to get 100% agreement because you can't use the scientific method. Whereas I think a lot of atheists demand that Christians be able to get everybody to that kind of agreement when it's just not that kind of question. What do you think of that?
So I think that Christian apologists have done a fair job of pushing back on this idea of what's widely called scientism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this idea that our methods of science are our only valid methods to knowledge, mm-hmm. or that scientific methods can settle any disputes that we might have, mm-hmm. About the world.
Right.
And so that view is just obviously false. I mean, it's again, one of those sorts of views that might seem intuitively attractive at first blush,
sure.
but it really just doesn't hold up to any philosophical scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question of God's existence, if you do any sort of cursory research into it, you'll find it is what you said, a perennial question of philosophy. It has this feature that other questions just don't have, other questions that we might be able to settle with an empirical test,
right.
or we might be able to settle with some experiment.
Right.
But this isn't one of those kinds of questions. And so once you start to understand deeper, not just this particular philosophical question, but other philosophically deep questions like, what are persons?
Right.
How do things matter? What is mind and how does it fit into the world? Like, these are all questions, just like in the philosophy of religion, where science might be able to come in and help inform us on some aspect of the question.
Right.
But it's not going to have the final say, because it's at bottom a philosophical question. It's asking, how is the world really in itself? What kind of, what has primacy, mind or matter?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of things like that. One of the beautiful things about the philosophy of religion is it touches on so many different subjects. You've got philosophy of mind, you've got ethics, you've got probability, you've got logic, you've got cosmology. I mean, it touches on so many different big questions that you can even then start seeing that deep philosophical landscape and why this question is such a perennial question.
You know what you guys could do would be a lot of fun? You guys should do a book or a podcast series, something like helping atheists become philosophers. And you use like the debates in the philosophy of religion to open up these other questions. Because what I find, Ben, that's really frustrating is I'll have atheists who are kind of who sneer about philosophy, and they just take certain positions that themselves are philosophically controversial. You know, they'll endorse scientism, but they basically see, well, the world is just matter and ethics is just about maximizing well-being. And they're just assumptions. It's just an assumption you've taken. You haven't thought it through at all to see actually there's other atheists even who would disagree with you on those terms. And guess what? Science cannot resolve the dispute you would have from each other. So take the advice where you want. But if you could do a series on helping atheists become philosophers, I would 100% endorse and retweet that. And Christians too, actually. And Christians too, because the other question I want to ask is how atheists can raise a level of discourse. A lot of Christians online, I'll see them doing stuff. It's that tar baby again. Like, Trent, can you join this comment thread I'm in? No, I don't have the time for that. And I don't want to be a part of everything that you're dragging up here. Where do you think Christians need to, a lot of them need to up their game?
So I would also emphasize the philosophy of it in that, so they've got a leg up in that there's this whole body of apologetics literature. It's a very great stepping stone that people in my camp just don't have to philosophy. So taking advantage of that already kind of puts them ahead. But a lot of apologists will just stop there. And I think that they need to engage with the strongest possible arguments on the other side. The people that you mentioned earlier, like Thule and Mackey and Schellenberg or Draper. Just like I remember a comment, I believe it was from Bishop Barron, who was like, you know, atheists need to engage with people like Aquinas and Duns Scotus. And I remember thinking, like, he's right. He's right. We need to be engaging with all of these thinkers. And so it should be the same way on the other side. It should be this mutual respect for the other side's philosophy and then trying to resolve disagreements. So I think both sides could stand to engage with stronger arguments on the other side. The other piece of advice that I would give is to try to avoid what I call clever maneuvers at all costs. And again, and this also applies to atheists as well. But certainly for apologists, the one that I have in mind is to present an argument kind of as a deductive proof. But then when the premises are challenged, to then kind of back off that and say, oh, well, there's this cumulative case for this, you know, this argument will get us a first cause, and this argument will get us a designer, and this argument will get us a moral bead. You know, okay, well, why wasn't this put up front? Why, I think that's a bit of a clever maneuver that,
You run the risk a little bit with arguments when you present multiple arguments of the leaky bucket problem, that a leaky bucket won't hold water. And even if you stack a bunch of leaky buckets together, the water will still end up leaking. So I think it's fine to have arguments that can prove different attributes of God, but you should be upfront as to what the argument gets you and what it doesn't get you. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not trying to paint any broad strokes here, but these are just certainly things in my experience that, you know, you kind of, another one is to kind of think of the problem of evil as this singular problem. When in reality, it's a family of related problems. And so that if you've found some satisfactory response to some particular aspect of the problem of evil, that's all you would need to do. And I think that's not that you'll often see this move in the form of, well, unless you accept the key premise of the moral argument, you can't even run the problem of evil as an atheist. And
Well, the idea that there's
right,
the idea that, well, there's like objective evil, because an atheist could run around and say, all right, I'm just going to take out the word evil and just use suffering or unjustified suffering or suffering without an overriding purpose. I see where you're. It's interesting when you say Christians need to be aware there's not just one problem of evil, there's a family of them. And it's atheists also have kind of a similar thing when I hear atheists say the cosmological argument, which often they just mean the Kalam cosmological argument, and they've never heard of any other argument whatsoever.
Yes.
So, and the other one with the cosmological argument, the one that bothers me is when people say, especially of the Kalam argument, well, the Kalam argument doesn't work because it doesn't even prove Christianity is true. It was never trying to do that. It was just trying to prove there is an uncaused cause of the universe. That would be like saying the Drake equation doesn't prove there are extraterrestrial beings in the universe because it doesn't prove that aliens built the pyramids. It's like, well, it never tries to do that. It's just trying to show, probabilistically speaking, given the size of the universe, there's a certain odds, there's other aliens somewhere out there. I think that goes back to we treat the arguments for what they're trying to do. And going after, for Christians, reading the other side that's strong, I think we're on the same page here. Like, when people tell atheists, you got to read Aquinas, my parallel to that is then for Christians, you got to read Hume. The modern version would be, if you're going to read Graham Oppie as an atheist, then you got to read Oderberg, Fazer, Richard Swinburne, and you guys do a good job of highlighting all of those different elements on your own page. Which brings me to my next question: that you all, the Real Atheology team, recently over the past year, has been investigating Thomism. You kind of have a Thomism project, that there's kind of a revival of Thomistic philosophy and arguing for the existence of God that's trying to get in the game when it's been William Lane Craig 24/7 for like 10 years. But you guys are seeing a need to respond to this, and you have been.
For sure. So certainly there's been two motivations for me at least taking on the Thomas project. Mm-hmm. So the first is so that my philosophy mentor, Dr. William Brenner here at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia, mm-hmm. he's a Thomist. So he's a Wittgenstein scholar and a Thomist.
Right.
And so he lit the Wittgenstein fire in me several years ago. Mm. And so it was just a matter of time before the Aquinas bug bit me as well.
Sure.
And so I had always kind of shelved Aquinas. I'll get to it when I feel that bug.
Right.
And so I had finally started to feel it because, like you said, there's been a resurgence. Probably the last 10 years is probably a fair timeline. Mm-hmm. I would say with people like Oderberg and Fazer coming onto the scene, because it has been, the William Lane Craig show. And if you go further than William Lane Craig, it's probably no further than Plantinga or Swinburne.
Right.
But now there's Catholic thinkers on the scene, as well as presuppositional apologetic people on the scene. So
right.
I know a lot of people associate that with figures like Saitin Brugenkate, mm-hmm. but there is a sophisticated tradition of Ventilian
presuppositional
apologetic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we also think that those are some, people to be that we should be trying to not only understand but engage with, and so that's kind of what lit my fire for the Thomism project.
Well, it's interesting. I think you guys shared on your social media not too long ago retweets from people saying that it was reading the works of like Fazer, Oderberg, Brian Davies, and other popular apologists online who are Catholic, who are Thomistic, and use these arguments to great effect, that many atheists, get the bug and they convert at least to theism because they see the strength of these arguments, and they've looked in the world of atheism and haven't found a strong reply. I mean, you go online to YouTube and you type out Kalam cosmological argument, and there must be like 80 million videos. Why William Lane Craig is wrong about the Kalam? Like, well, I know why you guys are picking on it. It's it's an argument that only has 20 words in it or something. It's easy to wrap your head around and start going at it. But then when you do like a contingency argument or a sophisticated argument for motion, people's eyes start to glaze over. And like I go on YouTube and I can find maybe like four videos responding to it. One of them being Mr. Atheist. I forget the name of that one guy, but it was a completely asinine video where he says Aquinas' argument doesn't work. It could prove a blueberry muffin made the universe. And I'm like, oh, this is why this argument is doing well. And you guys are probably seeing like we need to make a response. And I give you a lot of props actually for recently you were on Matt Frad's podcast and you debated Father Gregory Pine on the existence of God. And there was some high level Thomistic back and forth there that I think greatly benefited everyone. How did you prepare for that debate?
So my team and I got the offer from Matt Frad, and we knew a once in a lifetime philosophical opportunity when we saw one.
Sure.
So we jumped at it. So to help prepare for it, we all had been working on our own respective Thomist projects for things like blog posts, and I had been making discussion briefs, and so I had this whole body of Thomistic work. Plus some discussion briefs that I was like, hey, let's test this out. It's going to be an actual debate format. Mm-hmm. So let's run it like a debate. And so, I had in my mind three arguments, and I knew that one of them was going to be an argument from evil,
right,
to try to, but then I wanted to give two arguments specific towards Thomism itself, because I wanted to, one of my goals for the debate was to articulate the difference between theistic personalism and classical theism. So I think a lot of discussions end up talking past one another,
right,
because the atheist just doesn't appreciate this distinction and thinks of God as one being among many, or you know, rather than as, you know, thinking of them as the ground of all being.
Right.
So I wanted to give two uniquely specific Thomistic arguments. And so the one that was sort of my formulation, the one that I had been working with, was my version of a modal collapse argument. Mm-hmm. And then I got with my good friend, Joe Schmidt of Majesty of Reason.
Yes.
Who had been working with the argument from changing knowledge. And mm-hmm. so he and I bounced ideas off of that. And so those ended up being the three arguments that I ended up going up with. And then from there, I just made discussion briefs so that I could then try to, in the debate, see how they played out and where, mm-hmm. you know, we wanted to say as much as we could,
right,
in the time given that would be useful to both theists and atheists trying to mm-hmm. understand the material. So we wanted it to run like a lecture in one way, but clear and interesting enough mm-hmm. to, you know, keep people's attention in a debate.
Was this your first debate ever taking part in like a formal one?
No, I've done a couple others.
Oh, good.
So I did one with Tyler Vella several years ago. I've done a couple speaking engagements where I gave like lecture style mm-hmm. things. And then obviously I've done internet debates,
right,
of a similar format that I did with Matt Frad and Friar Gregory.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought it was great. And I really love that both of you had a lot of substance to what you were offering. And it just shows people a way that we can talk about the existence of God and really embrace these tough challenges and to think deeply. Like, I was just super happy that Matt picked my question to be the first question in the Q&A. First, it was just fun for me. I actually, of all the live debates I've seen, I've been in, I don't usually watch live debates. So it was just fun watching a live debate and not having to be in it, because I had just debated Alex O'Connor, the Cosmic Skeptic, not too long before this debate. So it was really fun just to watch this and ask my question. I don't mind if I don't want to talk your head off too much or get too deep into it, but I was curious about I'm glad you focus on the fact that God is the ground of being in classical theism. He does not change. He's pure act, has no potency. So one of the arguments, I guess this comes from Schmidt, aka the Doogie Howser of atheism. He's 19. He's smart. I'm excited maybe in the future to debate him. So is this idea, well, if knowledge, if facts, truths change, you know, in the world, as the world changes, does that mean, you know, God's knowledge changes? And that would seem to contradict the idea of God being immutable. Was that the essence of the changing knowledge argument you were making?
Yeah, more or less.
And so my question was, now for me, I could see how this argument would be hard to get around if you endorse a view of time that says like past, present, and future are dynamic, and that the past no longer exists and the future doesn't exist yet, and you know there are these tensed truths and things like that. But for me, I don't know if it's that much of a problem. This is the essence of my question I asked you in the debate, which is if all of time, moments in time, are equally real, and all truths, like if knowledge is about having knowing truths. And if all truths can be written in a kind of tenseless way, you can rewrite instead of like Trent and Ben are having an interview. It's just, you know, Trent and Ben interview on this date. If they're all tenseless truths, it seems like God could know them all tenselessly without any change. I mean, that was the essence of the question I asked in the debate. Do you have any more thoughts on that or?
I thought it was a great question. And it was one that had gotten me thinking, because again, this is one of those arguments that I'm still myself working through.
Sure.
And so I hadn't taken careful enough notice of how explicitly my example of there be, because the idea is that if change is a real feature
right
in the world, which is something that I, you know, was a premise that I thought both myself and Atomis could both concede.
Because, oh yeah, no,
you know,
I agree.
The argument from change.
Totally.
And so, but when I cashed it out in those tensed terms, you know, past, present, future, mm-hmm. it's one of those, you know, I hadn't considered. I was like, okay, well, does that mean that change then is not a real feature of the world if there's this B theory of time, and what are the implications of that for Thomism?
Right.
And I'm still working through that. I don't know. I thought it was a really good question.
Because I agree with you. Like I feel like my theology would work fine. And for the listeners, by the way, who want to go deeper into this, you can go back a few episodes. I have an episode on philosophy of time and what we're talking about here. I won't belabor the actually go back and check out the Philosophy of Time episode. But it sounds like, and for me, I'm trying to think it through too, because I'm okay with there being this kind of B theory of time, although I'm more off for a hybrid view. But, I tell you what, we're nearing the end of our time, and I don't want to derail too much with philosophy. But here's the thing. What we're doing right here, this dialectic, that is why I like following you guys on Twitter. This is the role model. What we're doing right now is the role model for Christians and atheists to say, okay, there's tough questions here. Let's think it through, and we'll learn something along the way. Even though we disagree about fundamental elements, we're both united in that pursuit of truth. That's what should matter most. So
I agree.
So yeah, I'll throw it back to you then. Where can people learn more about what you guys are doing to follow your work? And then I'll let you have any closing thoughts.
So like you said, we've got a Twitter account, we've got a Facebook, we've got an Instagram, we've got a YouTube channel. And then obviously we've got a podcast on Apple and Spotify and Podbean, anywhere you like to get, your podcasts from, we are on it. Mm-hmm. And, so we try to, come out with material on a semi-regular basis, but mm-hmm. because this type of material, it takes so much back work, it takes so much legwork.
Sure.
We don't have a regular stream yet. I'm hoping to grow my team over the next little bit, and so that we can get content that comes out more regularly that's of the same quality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, great. We'll definitely go check it out. I'll leave links in the show description for everyone. This has been Ben Watkins with the Real Atheology Podcast. Be sure to go and check that out. Check the links in the show description at trendhornpodcast.com, where you can leave a discussion post, comment on the episode, message me for ideas for future guests, and have access to great bonus content if you choose to become a premium subscriber at trendhornpodcast.com. Ben, thank you so much for being on the Council of Trent today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. And thank you guys for listening. And I hope that you all have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.